Well, at the time, Mark was the fifth richest man in the world. So I said to myself, do I want to have lunch with the fifth richest man in the world?
I'm very much a perfectionist, and I think I stand in the way of myself. I do think it's a fear of failure and a fear of messing up and not getting it right.
If you go out and look at the trees or the shrubs in the yard or a flower, they often have imperfections that didn't stop them from being a tree or a flower and being beautiful.
When I was first starting off, even on YouTube, I was very scared, you know, maybe what if I fail? What if this is embarrassing? What if the people at my high school see it and it's like not what I envisioned?
Or is it that you feel I might be stupid?
Low-key, dang, you're just...
Wait!
Did you just read me?
What?
Like a book.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Ease. We are so excited today because we have the wonderful Tom Lenoble having a conversation with us. Thank you for being here with us, Tom.
I'm so pleased to be with the both of you today. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
We have too.
We've a couple months.
Months.
Not only months, but also this entire week we've been prepping for this.
And here we are.
Finally. We've been so excited just to like pick your brain, and you have so much wisdom to share. How did you start your journey as a humanitarian, as an investor, an author, a resilience coach, a speaker? I feel like these are all so many accomplishments and accolades.
You know, I had this great corporate career. I worked at some really amazing companies. Mm-hmm. I worked at a company called MCI that broke up all the Bell companies once upon a time, that ended up going through a transition. Verizon owns what's left of it. And then I worked at Walmart.com. Mm-hmm. Before it was even really part of Walmart in the early days, and ran customer service for them. And then a company called Palm. I was traveling around the world leading global service operations. And then I ended up as an early employee of Facebook. And then I had my own consulting business and did some great things at a dating site that got bought by Match, and a remote support company that the IP got bought and is now the backbone of the Geek Squad and what they do for remote support. And then something happened. I got sick.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to pull back a little bit. And then I kept working some, but I had to pull back a little bit. And then I had something else happen. I fell in love and got married.
Oh, that's amazing. Love wins.
And so I traveled the world and did a lot of stuff. I was still involved in work. I didn't stop it altogether, but it wasn't my focus. And then I decided to retire, being retired, to be inspired.
Wow.
Say that one more time.
And as a result, I took what I knew, all the things I had learned, and I decided to create a whole new thing that I wanted to focus on to take it to the next level, which is how I used coaching that I learned before to bring that back into the picture, and became the CEO of a coaching academy, the Academy for Coaching Excellence. Mm-hmm. Took my speaking skills that I learned along the way and became a professional speaker. And then I have a book coming out soon that's really exciting to me. I'm also really great that I did well, and I think you have a responsibility to give back when you do well, so I became a philanthropist in it as well as part of what I do.
Going back to what you said about coaching, what type of coaching do you do?
Well, I do coaching where I primarily coach executives, executive directors of nonprofits, CEOs, or their teams. So sometimes in life, we need to take baby steps before we take big leaps. That's what I focus my coaching on.
That's awesome.
The other thing is something like, I call it the haystack method. Mm-hmm. You hear people always talking about the needle in the haystack. They can't find the needle in the haystack. It's pretty simple. You just remove the hay.
Yeah.
So in coaching, I hold the space to help people see what the hay is so they can move it out of the way to find that needle they're looking for, which they knew that answer all along.
I remember you mentioning to me and I that something happened 10 years later after Facebook.
Yeah, when I left, I went to Mark and I said, Mark, I'd like to see you in 10 years. And he said, why? You're leaving. And I said, well, I just want to see what happens, see what you're doing. Well, I forgot all about it. Well, 10 years later, I was sitting at my desk and up popped a Facebook message from Mark saying, still want to have lunch. Well, at the time, Mark was the fifth richest man in the world. So I said to myself, do I want to have lunch with the fifth richest man in the world?
Do you?
Hell yeah, I'm going to have lunch with the fifth richest man in the world.
As you should.
And so we set a date and I went there. And I went through all this security, but they had these two huge glass conference rooms. One was his and one was Sheryl Sandberg's, and he was having a meeting. And so they came and put me on a couch. So I intentionally put myself where I could kind of look out of the corner of my mind eye what was going on in this meeting. Mm-hmm. And so when they came out, Mark came to greet me. Mm-hmm. And as we went to greet, this photographer came up. And they took a picture of us together. And I thought, oh, great. They're going to mention that I was here in the you know, all hands or something. And then I realized later, no, it's security. They're taking a picture of me in case I do something to Mark Zuckerberg, the fifth richest man in the world.
What?
But we went in the conference room, and it was really, really great. We started talking, and we were supposed to have 30 minutes, and we went well over 40. There were people around the outside for the next meeting that were late, and we just kept going because we just had a lot to talk about what had happened in 10 years. It was really, really an interesting meeting. So 20 years is coming up.
Yeah. Wow.
We'll see if it happens again, because as I left, you go, you want to do this again in 10 years? And I said, sure, we'll do it again in 10 years. So who knows what might happen with that. But it was really, really interesting to go and experience the difference of this guy I met at 19, who now was the fifth richest man in the world.
So you've worked for several amazing companies. We're wondering if you've learned anything about yourself along the way.
The mistakes we make in our lives are our teachers, if we allow them to be.
Yeah.
I like to build cultures and where I work in a company or work with people that it's okay to make mistakes because that's how we learned. Mm-hmm. But you learn a lot about yourself as you get more life's wisdom. The interesting thing about life's wisdom is by the time you gain it, you're too old to use it for too long. But it's a very interesting thing about life of how that really happens, especially if you're open, you're inquisitive, you're curious, and you're willing to do things that are uncomfortable.
I love that.
Because the things that are comfortable become natural to us. We don't learn a lot about that. It's trying new things and learning new things that we learn about ourselves and redefine what we think we might like and how we want to be. So if you can think it's sort of like layers, you learn a basic of something, and then the next thing you do, even management, you learn you have a smaller team, and then you learn from that allows you to take on more and grow. And that's the thing I learned most, was allowing myself to continue to learn and be open to learning. And I hope to be learning as long as I'm breathing.
It's funny how usually the things that you're afraid of, when you do them, you're like, it's very reflective, like you introspective. You're so scared of doing something and then you do it and you're like, oh, wow. Okay, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yes, yes.
And I've learned so much about myself. And like, I never in a million years thought I would want to do something like this. And now that I did it, I'm so grateful that I did it. And now I'm like so curious about this other experience.
Yeah, it's important to take risks, you know, not crazy risks, but risks, things that are uncomfortable, things that may speak to you, you know, things that you think you're interested in. Why not go explore them and see what they're about? Yeah. If you think about many of the startups today came from somebody's idea.
True.
Many of them fail. But those people who had startups that fail become very valuable because they've been through that process of creating, building, and having it not work out. Mm-hmm. Can be very humbling. Mm-hmm. But what you learned, you're then able to transfer and use it in something new.
I kind of feel like this kind of goes back to just a lot of the mistakes make us learn. What would you say is a mistake that you made early in your business days that you wish you could have done differently?
Mistakes that you can make is where you don't think you're good enough to do something. We all hear about the imposter syndrome. Yes. And it's really real. It's almost like we have it on a spectrum of things. Mm-hmm. And it either comes in the flavor of I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. People don't like me enough. So all of us can have a different flavor of it, but it shows up, and sometimes we don't step into something that could be really good or that we could really learn from or a good experience, because we just don't think we can, or we don't think it's something we've aspired to be, or somebody's better than we are.
Do you have an experience where you felt like you undermined yourself or underestimated yourself?
Yeah, I remember this one time I was working for MCI, and I got tapped. I was in a customer service center, and they had started this project to try and take all that grew so fast. They had all these disparate systems, and they were going to create this one system. And I was one of 26 people around the country that were brought together for this project for 3 months. We all went to Washington, D.C. We were together for supposed to be together for 3 months. We were together for six.
What?
And it was really, really interesting, except the project failed. Oh, it got canceled after all that. And I went back to where my division, where I came from, the customer service center, and took on a new role. And then I got a call one day. And part of what we worked on did turn into something. It was a group called Marketing Systems that did all the training and documentation for all the systems that were used. And they wanted me to come lead it.
Oh, okay. So it partially succeeded.
That piece succeeded for me because they wanted me to come lead it. Well, I immediately thought, I can't do this. I don't know anything about, I'm a customer service person. I don't know about systems. The department was housed in the IT building, so it was in the technical building. I'm a customer service person. And then when I looked at who was working there, they were all these experts and everything. So I could have missed that opportunity and not done it by my own fear of thinking I wasn't good enough.
Wow, yeah.
Do you think that your idea of success has changed over time?
My idea of success today is that I do the best I can, that I learn from it, and in the process, I serve others in doing it.
That's beautiful. I love that. And I'm going to start saying that. I'm just like, everything that you're saying is marinating in my brain. And like, I'm going back to what you were saying, like even 5 minutes ago. I love how you said that you were afraid to take on this role because you weren't even like an IT guy. You're doing customer service, and you start thinking and pointing out all of the flaws and why you can't do it. You know, I don't have the experience. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not an IT guy. I do customer service. When in reality, like, they weren't even looking to hire you for any of the flaws and no's that you had in your head. It was everything that you do embody, like you being a good leader and being able to guide people. That's amazing.
You know, sometimes people see something in us that we don't see in ourselves.
Yeah, that's true. And I kind of feel that way even with like our relationship and my friendship with Justice. Yeah.
And what happens is we don't share that often. We think that we're, you know, stepping on grounds we shouldn't go, instead of supporting one another and saying, hey, did you ever think about, or, you know, I know sometimes when I see people or I talk to people, total strangers, and I hear their voice, I'll ask them, do you sing?
What? Why sing?
And I said, well, you have a perfect voice to sing. And I love watching their reaction of, they probably deep inside had thought about sometime in their life singing, but just didn't think they could. Yet they had this perfect voice. You can hear it, that they would be a tremendous singer. You know, we get hung up in the coulda, woulda, shoulda.
That's so true.
I coulda, I shoulda, I woulda. Or the other thing we all get hung up in is, what happened? When I tell you that, what I mean is, we look at something happen and we try and analyze it. We try and think of what went on. There are no do-overs. Unless you're going to learn something from what happened, come right here in the present. Because while you're spending your time of, I could have done better in that relationship, or I could have said that differently, or I could have done something differently when I was in that professional situation. Unless you're going to learn something from it, the time you're spending there, you're going to miss a beautiful rainbow or a butterfly fly by.
Everything that you've said so far has resonated so deeply with us, because even yesterday we were kind of talking about imposter syndrome, and I just hate that term.
It's the worst.
I'm just like, let's get rid of this. How about we just decide not to have
imposter? Create a new name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, create a new name for it that doesn't sound so. But it's what it is, right? It is what it is. It's, you know, we don't think we can be good enough. And then what we do is we end up missing out on something because we're coming from that instead of what we're feeling. Perhaps what our heart is telling us, our intuition is telling us, or even our brain is saying, why not give it a try?
I feel like nowadays a lot of young people, we have this like set idea of what success is. And I know that it varies from person to person because everyone's idea of success is very different. But usually it is like this, like, I want to make a lot of money and have these things that I've always dreamt of, like a nice car, a nice house, or like just have money to spend. That is what like success is to me. How do you feel now, like going through life and obviously being very successful yourself, and now you're at that place where you have all of this wisdom? Obviously your idea of success has changed, and I love what you said. I love the idea of just like giving it your all and trying your best and like helping people along the way. That in itself is success to you.
Here's what I learned about success.
Yeah.
Is we think that success means I've got the nice car, uh-huh. I've got the house, uh-huh. I've got the fancy clothes, or whatever it is that speaks to us. Uh-huh. Success is not that. Success is what you did that allowed that to be a byproduct. The success you had was what you learned, what you produced, what you created, how you served others, how what you did in the world that brought you those things. They're a byproduct of the success, not the success itself. Yeah. We have our focus on the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. If we're doing the things that make our heart sing, we'll call it, we're going to be successful. There's this great book, if you haven't read, called Flow. But it's really like the science of flow. And if you, I know you've experienced it, like you're doing something you really love and time just goes away, that's because you're in the flow. When we're in the flow, we have the most creativity. We have the most enjoyment. Time goes by really quickly because it really, really, really feels good and sings to us, right? That's probably a critical idea. This might be me building something that I could be successful at.
Dom, I'm tearing up, Dom. I'm tearing up. That really, I really felt that. I really felt that. And sometimes.
Are you in your flow?
I am kind of in my flow, but I also just feel like there are certain things that you know you're meant to pursue or like have be a part of your life simply because of the feeling that it gives you. Like, just like that. I feel like sometimes when I'm doing something that I know I'm like, this makes me feel good, it's just like this like natural feeling that just like comes in from my like soul, my heart.
Yes, and what's really interesting is the opposite is true. We know when we're doing something that isn't good for us.
Yeah.
If we're in the department store buying clothes that we know we don't have the money for, we think we feel good. We think we're doing something that makes us feel good. It doesn't. It's got something to do with something else. We're trying to keep up with somebody else or trying to look a certain way because we know we can't do that. Or some people do it with a relationship. They have this image of who they want to be with. So they're going after the person they want to be with. Intuitively, no, this isn't the right person, but it looks like something. It's almost like a shiny object. So we go after it. Yeah, we all know there's a little voice telling us there's something not right. We're not coming from our own heart, our own space, our own intuition, our own knowing.
That's happened to me before.
Really?
Yeah. I get what you mean.
Well, I have a loaded question for you, Tom. This was a big one. I kind of feel like we're kind of diving into this world right now, but how do you think we as people, we achieve our highest potential? And what steps can we take to start the journey and to make that journey consistent?
Yeah, that is a good question, isn't it? You know, we all have to eat. We have to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
There's things we need to do in life, so we have to cover those bases. But to make sure we're doing things that keep us healthy.
For sure, for sure.
that we're not hurting our bodies, that we're not hurting our minds, doing things that bring us enjoyment. You know, where we teach this coaching, there are certain energies we speak to. The energy of time, the energy of money, the energy of relationship. There's a few others that we teach. But if you think about these things and you're coming from them, they're really important in your life. Sometimes I even talk about them as sort of tanks that need to be filled up, you know? And if the tanks are out of balance, if you're not getting enough enjoyment in your life, you're not going to get as much satisfaction.
Yeah.
So do you think that almost like to reach our highest potential or that version of ourselves, it's almost just having balance amongst our entire lives?
You know, I think it's learning to have balance and learning what you don't like as well as what you do like, trying things and not getting hung up on how well you did it, mm-hmm. whether you were successful at it, but acknowledging yourself that you tried, acknowledging yourself and what did I learn from it?
Wow. That's amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's these interesting factors about you in Gen Z. And one of the things I love to hear is when they say, you're lazy.
Oh my God. Yeah, why does everyone say that?
They said the millennials were lazy.
Do they always just say it about
Trust
the younger
generation? They said I was lazy, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those things that I notice that come out because you're not doing what we think you should be doing. You're learning, you're exploring, you're growing, and just like every generation, you're trying to find your own way and do it your own way, mm-hmm. just like the slangs words we use. Every generation does.
Just because our world is mainly like online doesn't mean that we're not doing anything.
Of course your world is online. You're the first generation that grew up with being online from birth.
I grew up on Club Penguin. Do you know what Club Penguin is?
No.
When I was 10 years old, I was glued to the computer playing like this like website game where you are a penguin, literally.
It's and just you, like, you with yeah, a bunch of penguins.
Yeah, you never knew without. You never knew a time without.
No,
it.
Right after school,
10,
I'd run.
Literally, so like yeah. I was spending so investing so much time on this online game.
You know, I've been in this conversation with people lately that's really interesting about AI.
Uh huh. Oh yeah.
And what's really interesting is I hear parents talk about their concern that their kids aren't using their brains because you can just go to AI and find the answer. Well, AI's here. AI's not going away. It's fabulous. Now there's going to be, just like everything else, it's going to be used for bad things.
Yeah, I love
you. You know,
child.
I remember when we started trying to give our credit cards for something and people would tell you, don't give your credit card, right? Well, then we built systems that stopped the fraud of credit cards. Yeah. AI is going to take care of itself. But as I look at it, as we're doing this, it's going to happen. It's going to develop. Mm-hmm. What I think is going to come out of it, which I think is great for your generation, is creativity,
Ooh.
Empathy, and leadership. Those things that require a human touch.
I kind of almost argue the point that I don't think AI is making us not think. I think it's just making us use our brains in a different way.
In a different way. And the same thing has happened for generation upon generation as new things came out. What I think we miss out on these judgments that you're lazy is, what can I learn from you? How do I take what you've learned and you do so well and teach myself? So I know back, I used to do this keynote that I would go around and talk to companies when the millennials were coming. Sure, they're doing now Gen Z's coming, right? And people were like, you know, and so I would go talk to companies and I would share with them, I don't think you understand. The people you have working for them, not only are they going to retire, but in case you don't notice, people die. We don't stay here forever.
Yep.
This is your new workforce. You think they're lazy. I can remember what they said about the millennials. You're lazy. You all have tattoos. You only wear sandals. You know, you don't wear clothes, right? It's all these judgment things about, well, this is your workforce that's coming. So what the smart companies did, I remember this insurance company, is they took a millennial fresh to the workforce, paired them up with a baby boomer that had been doing it forever, had them work together. What happened? The millennial learned about the business from the baby boomer. The baby boomer learned how to use technology. When you look at the generations, you find all these things that happen in cycles. Often it skips generations. So for example, if you look at the Gen X was not close with their parents so much. That was during Latchkey Key, where parents were, mothers were, the divorce rate was higher, so they were single mothers, so they weren't as close. Whereas those kids had the millennials, the baby boomers had millennials, very, very close with their kids.
Yeah, it's amazing totally. How you learned this through just your experience with coaching and your previous experiences from working at other companies. But from a business like perspective, do you think that not even just with generations, but like with you, do you have to be emotionally intelligent to like be successful in business?
I think it sure helps. You know, I don't think you have to, but I think, you know, having emotional intelligence, you're feeling, you're experiencing more, you're having different attributes of what's going on about it than you are if you're just doing it from your brain and not. You know, another thing that I think is really interesting is the Pope just died.
Uh-huh. R.I.P.
For most people, that's the only Pope they've ever seen. Yeah. I've seen three Popes.
This was my first Pope. Wait, so you don't think that in order to be a good leader, you don't necessarily have to have emotional intelligence?
I think you end up learning it, or you are a different kind of leader. A very different leader is the one that's telling you what to do, ordering you around what to do, giving you direction from the top down, than somebody that's working collaboratively and thinking about how you're feeling about it and what it means to you.
There's a study that shows that many psychopaths find success within corporations. And there is a study that read that nearly 4% of business executives fit the psychopathy profile. So most people who show psychopathic traits are high-ranking executives.
Here's why.
Wait, tell us the tea.
Here's why. What happens often is the people who are the most demonstrative, who are the loudest, who produce the best results, are the ones that get promoted. Nobody thinks about who did they step on to get there, how did they treat others to get there. So you end up with people that rather than, or worse, based on somebody, how they look, what's the color of their skin, how they wear their hair, can be determined about who gets ahead. That's not fair. That's not equality. Your generation is demanding that more than ever.
Do you need to be empathetic to be a true good leader?
You know, empathy is a big word right now going on. And I think a world without empathy is pretty scary to me, because that means we don't care about what's happening to each other. We don't take the time to see what it might feel like if I think about how that feels to you. Yeah. I think empathy is critical.
I love what you said earlier about being of service to others. I think that that's something that I've like started to just think about. I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty spiritual, and I think I've like been trying to deepen that connection with myself, because I mean, my goal is to be a good person. So I've been thinking of how I can be of service to others and what that looks like.
Yes, those of us that gain wisdom, or we learn things, or we're really successful, I feel we have a responsibility to. For example, I'm involved with an organization called Scholar Match in the Bay Area. It's all for all of California. And what they do is they send first-gen students to college.
Oh, that's awesome.
But the first-gen students are performing really, really well in school. But the way the resources in the family, I remember one, they didn't even know if the lights were going to be home when they got that home one day. So this is a person that's doing very well academically, that they'll never be able to go to school because the finances aren't there to do it. And this nonprofit makes it available for them to be able to go to school, graduate. Now, if you think about it, you not only shifted their life, the trajectory of their family to come, probably their own family, of how you shifted something that would have played the same thing over and over again with somebody that was really bright and needed that opportunity. Yeah. Even worse, what would we have missed out on? What are they going to contribute that we would not have seen had they not had that opportunity.
I feel like we are here to connect, and like that's the one of our biggest purposes.
Yeah, say thank you, or how's your day? What little does it take? And what's great about it is, you know, today I did it with the flight attendant. How's your day today? You know, you could tell she was like, nobody, you know, she's like, wow, you know. And it makes you feel good too. You don't do it for that reason, but why not?
That actually kind of goes with one of my questions I wanted to ask. What does it look like to grow a company with integrity? So using what you just said, but into company form. And are there any practices that help you stay grounded while navigating competition?
When you're growing a company with integrity, you live by some standards. Mm. And you stick to them even in the tough times. Just like in the great times that you say, I have these standards, you stick by them in the tough times.
Yeah.
And I personally think when you come from integrity, where you end up, you're much more you have much more pride in it. Mm-hmm. The success that you achieve is far more special than if you compromised your integrity, walked on people, hurt people. Not everybody, obviously. There's some people that's not going to phase. Mm-hmm. But I think in life, we live by these standards that we have. I'm going to share that with you later. I'm going to take you all through an exercise of that I think will be really enlightening for you. So I think that, you know, we all get to choose that. That's something we get to choose on our own about how we, what we believe integrity is, what those values are, what those things that we consider are standards of integrity. Are we honest?
That's so powerful, because I feel like obviously we all get tested with life. You know, there's like different experiences that arise. There's good, there's bad. And like sometimes when you're under pressure, you almost feel like, you know, oh, maybe should I just like succumb to this thing, or should I just like, you know, like adjust the way that I'm.
Take the easy way.
Yeah.
When you know, you can hear it in your head telling you, don't do it. And you do it anyway, because it's the easy way. You know, I was reading something yesterday as I was looking at some more Gen Z stuff to prepare to talk to you today, which, thank you so much. I was so excited about meeting you.
Thank you.
I was reading this new survey that came out, this new that they had put together, that was really interesting about how the difference of how men in your generation and women are seeing things differently, from politics to the woman, where a woman should be. Where some men are thinking a woman's place is in the family, where women are thinking the exact opposite. So I think it's an interesting thing to look at and ask yourselves in your own generation, like, what do you think in your own generation? Do you see that the guys in your generation are thinking differently than the women are? Do you see that now?
I feel like even on the internet, there's been like this culture of like trad wife, traditional wife, surfacing, and we see a lot of it. I feel like a lot of conversations are being had over that topic. And I didn't know if it was just kind of a trend. I kind of thought that it was just like, oh, maybe it's just right now, like people are in their like coquette era and they're feeling like they want to wear like a cute dress and make bread from scratch. But yeah, we are seeing that.
If you look back at time, there's a wonderful author named Lynn Twist that I encourage you to read her latest book. But she is a woman who years ago said, I want to end world hunger. Mm-hmm. Well, world hunger hasn't ended, but we've certainly improved it. These are things that take decades, yeah. Right? Things that don't happen just in a short time. But I think what's continued with that over time, as women are more educated, and if you see in the workforce, women are taking leadership roles, what's happening to men. I know one of the things I've been thinking about, which I really don't have my head wrapped around yet, is how we make sure we're teaching our little boys who didn't experience any of this equality, balance, integrity, without all what happens typically in society is how many people that we know that they're parents did it, so they learned it that way, so they do it that way, and they do it that way, unless they have something in their life that maybe changes it, that gets kind of a roll-down effect that isn't always the most positive thing.
Even like just right now, just talking about the fact that women's roles have changed over time and how we are taking on more leadership roles and, you know, we're kind of growing in this space. I almost feel like maybe sometimes feeling good about that, do you think maybe men see that as a negative thing and as a threatening thing to their existence?
You know, I don't know what they would say, but I think so.
I think so.
And what I would say is don't go back. You know, we're seeing it happen in many, many different parts of society. Everyone, no matter their race, their ethnicity, their gender, should have an equal chance to do anything they want to do.
Wow. That's so powerful. That's such a mic drop.
That is a big
We just need like a moment to just like take that all in and process it.
You know, I have this great story real quickly that I want to tell you that really determines this. I worked at this company one time and there was this woman who ran marketing. And she won all these awards in the company, outside of the company, all these marketing associations. And one day we were sitting around, we were all having beers one day. And so we said to her, her name was Kim. And we said, Kim, people were saying what they studied in school. And we got to Kim and we said, oh, you got an MBA, Mark. We don't even need to ask you. And she started laughing and she goes, no. And we all looked at her. She said, I never took a marketing course in my life. I'm a concert pianist.
What?
I took music in school.
That's really cool.
And here she was, this leading marketing person.
You can do anything with whatever.
You can do anything. Mm-hmm. You can do anything. What's important when there's so many of you is that you go to school. Mm-hmm. Because without it, it's going to be a requirement for something. Although that's shifting a little bit over time, but it's going to be a requirement. What you end up doing in life isn't based always on what you went to school.
That's true. My degree is public health. Like, I'm here.
But
it's a perfect example. I mean, look at this woman. She's, I mean, really was thought of as a marketing whiz in the marketing world, not just in the company, who studied music.
So this is my final question. How do you think perfectionism holds people back? And how can we improve having that mindset of, you know, everything has to be perfect?
There's one thing about perfectionism that I learned. When we're trying to be perfect at something, it's because we don't want to make mistakes. When we don't make mistakes, we typically don't learn.
Whoa, true. That's true. I feel like I've like, personally, I think I'm very much a perfectionist, and I think I stand in the way of myself because I am afraid of putting something out there that isn't exactly how I envisioned it to be. But I do think if I'm psychoanalyzing myself right now, I do think it's a fear of failure and a fear of messing up and not getting it right.
I think the other thing about perfectionism, if you look around in life and all the things that are around us, if you go out and look at the trees or the shrubs in the yard or a flower, they often have imperfections that didn't stop them from being a tree or a flower and being beautiful.
You're right.
That actually reminds me of this book called The Artist's Way. It talks about how there's an inner voice of self-doubt, and that is called like our censor. And so that censor will be like, it calls out our self-doubt, our negativity and criticism. And it explains how we tend to criticize ourselves and show no mercy. For me, sometimes it's like, I feel like I can't, and then I'll just like write it down. But
is it you feel like you can't, or is it that you feel like you don't know?
Maybe it's I feel like I don't know. I have to dig into it.
Or that you're not sure.
Maybe not sure, but it is the feeling of not being comfortable with the unknown.
Or is it that you feel I might be stupid?
Low-key, am I? Dang, you're just...
Wait!
Did you just read me?
What?
Like a book.
I don't know if that's what it is, because we'd have to spend a lot more time. But if you look at your reaction, the I can't doesn't have enough energy.
Oh!
The I don't know is a,
yeah.
I'm not sure, well, maybe.
Yeah.
The I'm stupid.
Yeah, I'm stupid.
It was almost, and here's the thing about it. If that were it, I'm not saying it is, but if it isn't, you're clearly not stupid.
Okay, so Tom, this is my favorite part of the episode. We love to share the space and the table with our audience and get questions from them. So we ask them to ask us any life-related, business-related, career-related questions. So yeah, let's get into it. Can we get a question, please?
Hey, Nai, this is Michelle. And to answer your question about what is one thing you're struggling to balance, it would be time management. I feel like I always tell myself I'll get better with it, and I never do. I'm such a big procrastinator as well, and I'll always put things to the very last minute. So right now, I just got a new job, and I'm balancing that with school, well, college. And yeah, it's been rough right now. So yeah. You know, I just gotta thug it out, I guess. But yeah.
Michelle, that's such a great question. Here's the good news, Michelle. You know it. Here's the better news. Some people actually perform better by doing it at the last minute. But if it's bothering you, then you can do something about it. That's up to you to choose to. You know, I've known people that are late to things, and so what they do is they set their watch or their clock early, which I've always thought is kind of like weird because you already know you set the clock early. But for some people, that works. But I think really what your answer is, you wouldn't be bringing it up if it wasn't something that you want to do something about or change in your life. Your solution is simply to make a decision that you're going to do it differently. You hold the power to make these changes. If you're a procrastinator and you don't want to be, don't hang out in "I'm a procrastinator" and keep saying it over and over again. If you're going to be one, just be one.
Own up.
But if you don't want to be one, you've acknowledged it, take steps, baby steps. What we try and do in life is try and shift everything with one big move. Do something small. Take a small baby step. Like, of all those projects that you've got to get done that one night, just start by doing one a few days earlier.
Wow. I'm loud of words. I'm at loss of words. Yeah, because I'm like, I can relate to that. I mean, in college, I was a huge procrastinator. Like she said, I only turned in things at 11:59. But then when I graduated, I was like, I want to start being, like, don't get to places that, like, not being 10 minutes late, even if it's just, like, being...
Here's a better one for you. Mm-hmm. The dirty dishes are dirty in the sink. The only way they're going to get clean is to wash them. You can either wash them now or let them sit in the sink and wash them later. It's up to you.
Oh.
It's all whether you want the dishes to be clean and you don't have to look at dirty dishes. Some people don't care about looking at dirty dishes. If the dirty dishes bother you, wash the dishes. Takes up the same amount of time whether you do it now or wait.
That's true. I think, like, do you think when you say take baby steps, does that count? Does making a decision count as the baby step?
Yes, because if you think about it, when something like Michelle is sharing that feels really big and heavy, like it's this really big thing, and you try and bite it off all at once, it's much, much more difficult than starting to take little baby steps, because little baby steps add up to big steps. Big steps add up to leaps. You know, there's an old saying, walk before you run.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
Honestly, one thing I'm struggling to balance with at school is, like, time for my mental health. Like, I go to school, I'm a college student full time, and then I'm, like, a part to, like, full time, like, employee at a job I work at. And there's just, like, no time. And also being a girl doesn't help either, because I'm emotional as fuck. So it's just, like, sometimes, like, the simplest things will send me into, like, a panic. And then I'll just be crying for hours on end. A girl just wants to live, love, and laugh. And a girl can't. No time for this mental health. Honestly, it's crazy. But love you, Nai.
Girl, I feel you.
Thank you for your question. And I relate. And... yeah, sometimes I just want to, like, throw myself on the floor and cry.
You totally need to, like, just take a breath, take away your head from, like, all the noise, yeah, and then focus on you. It sounded like she said that she put a lot of people before herself. And I think with that, I've struggled before, and it's just relearning how to put yourself first. Then you can help people, and then you're able to better help people once you help yourself.
I think what you just said is really beautiful. Often we get confused about helping others before helping ourselves. And if we want to be really of service to others, we have to take good care of ourselves to be present. So I encourage you to take your breaks and learn how you use that break to nourish yourself. Take the time and break away or your lunch break and do something for you. And make sure that in your schedule, try to work it out so you have time for you, where you have a full day away from it to go do something that's nurturing, healing, and makes you feel good.
Can we get the next question, please?
Hey, Nailea. My name's Natalia, and I'm a high school student who just started a phone case brand called Cherry Sunset Cases. It's all inspired by bright, beachy summer vibes, and I design and market everything myself through print and demand. Since I'm just getting started, I'd love any advice on how to grow or market a brand from scratch, especially with a small budget and no big following. What helped you build momentum when you were just starting out? Thank you so much. I'm excited to hear the episode.
Natalia, congratulations on starting your business. It's really exciting. You're going to go places. You know, when we're starting something and we're trying to do it and we're learning, one of the best things you can do is go learn how others did it. Go learn how others did it, and then even ask somebody to be your mentor. Tell them what your passion is and why you're wanting to do it, and ask them if they would help mentor you. But remember to always still do it your way.
I definitely relate to you, Natalia. I think that when I was first starting off, even on YouTube, I was very scared of judgment, and I was scared of the results. I kind of thought that, you know, maybe what if I fail? What if this is embarrassing? What if the people at my high school see it and it's like not what I envisioned it to be? But I think the what if it does turn out to be a good thing? What if it turns out right? What if I am able to communicate my ideas and my personality in the way I want to communicate it? What if that is fulfilled? What if that comes out of this experience? I think that what if is worth it. I think you're starting your business from a place of being passionate about whether it's like being a businesswoman or making money or being creative and expressing your ideas creatively. I think there is that drive within you. And I think if you just trust that instinct, I think failing is just like, it's just a part of the process, and it's a beautiful thing.
Hey, East Radio. I run a small business in online sales, and something I struggle with is getting customers to leave reviews on their experience. What are some ideas to engage customers? I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Sir, thank you for your question. Let's see. I mean, I personally don't have any experience with people struggling to leave reviews. Do you have any advice, Tom?
I think what I would do is, if people aren't leaving your reviews, perhaps tell them the value and what it means to you to leave the review. So when we ask people to do something and we don't tell them what the value is in doing it, it's sort of like, well, that doesn't really matter whether I do it or not, or they don't have a desire to do it. Where when you share with them why you're using the review, what it means to you, how it might improve something, they understand what your value is that you're trying to drive, and therefore it makes it more valuable to them.
I love that. Was like that was the perfect business perspective. I love that. All right, thank you guys so much for your questions. We love to hear them. If you want to participate in the next one, follow our Instagram. So Tom, we have a final question on our show. We like to tie it back into the name Ease. So how can being more mindful and intentional in our careers and our lives bring us a sense of ease?
You know, I think that if you want ease in your life, it's not to force anything. It's to allow things to come. We all work really hard, take time to reassess, take time to feel what you've learned, and remember that ease means that you're not creating friction, that you're not making it difficult, that you're taking a break, that you're acknowledging what you did, and allow some space to feel the ease.
That was so good. That was amazing.
I feel like Nailea and I have been very inspired from today, and we felt so much growth today. So thank you for being here, Tom. Thank you for taking the time out of your day.
Yeah, we appreciate you so much and we admire you so much. So thank you.
It's great to be with you today. I'm excited about what you're doing.
That means the world.
Yeah, keep at it.
We'll see you guys next time. Tune in to the next one. Also, can we get a round of applause for Tom, please? Yay! Yeah. Yeah.